Last case on our calendar, 05-1061, in re the guardianship of Donald Peck. Mr. Cahill.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of the Supreme Court, I would like to reserve 1 minute on rebuttal.
Watch your time on the clock there.
My name is Kenneth Cahill, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Ethel Peck. A trial court speaks through its journal. It speaks through its judgment entries. The journal reflects what the court has decided. The nunc pro tunc entry is the vehicle used by the trial court to correct clerical mistakes. Basically, these clerical mistakes are apparent on the record. They are obvious in nature, and basically, they clarify the journal to make the journal mistake-free by correcting the mistake. In this case, there is no clarification, as the appellate court stated in paragraph 8 of its opinion. To clarify, something must be unclear. Something must be left out. Something must be in existence. It must be tangible. It must be known. It must be decided. It must have been discussed.
Was that the status of the individual? Was that unclear as to when this individual was or was not declared incompetent, or when he became incompetent?
Your Honor, I believe it was. It was never discussed, the time period in this case, especially from May 10 of 2002 through June 21st of 2002.
But did the magistrate on May 10th find him to be incompetent? That's not really a fluid state. That's not one that the magistrate couldn't have found him incompetent on May 10th and said, well, he's really not going to be incompetent until June 22nd. It's a status that exists regardless of what the law says about it. He is or he isn't incompetent, and they found him incompetent.
The trial was held May 10. The magistrate's decision came out May 22nd, but that was not discussed. The retroactivity or the duration or the time period was never discussed by the magistrate or the trial court in this matter.
Was there evidence adduced at the hearing to determine by a medical professional or through a medical report the level of incompetency here?
I believe there was.
The condition of incompetency and the onset of incompetency. The condition that was the underlying condition that resulted in the declaration of incompetency.
I believe there was evidence that there was put forth as to his incompetency. I don't think there was any specificity as to exactly when it commenced, but there was evidence that there had been a period of time.
Prior to the May of 2002 hearing?
I believe there was.
All right. Now, it really doesn't matter if someone's incompetent. What matters is the ability to enter into a marriage.
Correct.
You don't have to be declared incompetent to not have the requisite mental state to enter into a marriage. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I believe what you're saying is, can an incompetent enter into a marriage?
No. Well, incompetent, but not necessarily judicially declared incompetent. You don't need a judicial declaration of incompetency. There could be testimony that it comes in that makes it clear that the individual was medically or psychologically or how whatever the causes of incompetent, but not have a declaration of an incompetency by a court at that time. Just like an incompetent to contract.
I understand, Your Honor. I believe if I'm interpreting you correctly, if someone is found judicially incompetent, can they still marry? Am I understanding you correctly?
No, just the opposite. You're not found judicially incompetent, because you can be incompetent without being judicially incompetent.
True.
An inability to contract because of your mental condition. has nothing to do, that exists, and later it is judicially determined through an order, but there can be evidence that at the time, for example, the marriage took place, et cetera, he was incompetent.
Correct. I agree. I agree with you.
I have a question of whether we still have a case or controversy in existence. Is Mr. Peck still alive?
He is.
And what happened to the annulment action? Is that gone forward yet?
The annulment action has gone forward, and the annulment action was found, was dismissed by the domestic relations court. So they are still married.
They're still married. So do we still have a case or controversy in existence?
Well, the concern is that if this retroactivity is allowed, that potentially there could be a collateral action from this decision to that domestic relations case. And at the time that this was appealed, I believe that that was a concern, that a collateral attack could still occur.
But if that action has been resolved, do we still have remaining case or controversy in this case? Does it matter anymore?
Well, unless the domestic relations decision can be seen as void. If this is allowed to occur, backdating the judgment entry, it's possible to say that the domestic relations decision is not just voidable, but void. And therefore, that judgment entry is, that can be attacked at any time.
What was the basis of the dismissal?
There was a full trial in the domestic relations case, and the magistrate found that there was a marriage, and that Mr. Peck understood he was entering into a marriage contract, and the trial judge of the domestic relations court affirmed that decision.
So that comes back to Justice O'Connor's question. In the domestic relations action, there was an opportunity for both sides to do a full dress presentation of evidence as to the level of competency of this individual when he entered into the marriage, and that decision was made irrespective of the determination as to the effective date of the incompetency determination for purposes of his estate.
I believe so. Nonetheless, I believed it was important to still protect my client and the decision that was rendered in case of a collateral attack.
Well, if we were to determine that he had been, if he were legally incompetent by determination of the probate court, then the decision is just legally incorrect on the annulment. Is that how it works?
No, I think if...
That's a bar to marriage?
No, it's not a bar to a marriage. The judicial incompetence is not a bar to a marriage.
Right.
Nonetheless...
So
And I understand what you're saying. We've already gone before the judicial court in the domestic relations
yes.
case. We've already had that action. Each side had the opportunity to present evidence, which was done.
But, counsel, if I remember correctly, if an incompetent wishes to marry, and that can happen, I mean, a judicially declared incompetent, isn't it with the approval of the guardian?
I think that might be necessary to do that. But I do not have that answer.
Let me ask you this. I think this case is far more significant than it may appear on its face, because it every day there are hundreds of magistrates who are recommending decisions to trial judges, and the magistrates' reports are based upon their findings of fact as of a certain date, whether it's domestic relations or whatever it may be, juvenile court. And so it's clear from our rule that the magistrates' decision, as a rule, said it's really a recommendation to the court, is not effective until the date the trial, the judge, puts on an order. And the question then becomes, which I think relates to the nunc pro tunc order here, is what are the critical dates? I mean, as of the date that the trial judge enters his or her order, the facts have already been established sometime before that order. And so one way to look at it is that the magistrate's decision, if it becomes the order of the court, that means that the court then has found that the facts were as of the dates that the magistrate found them to be extant. If we look at it that way, then the nunk-pro-tunk order is simply saying that not as of the day I put the order on someone's incompetent, but as of the date of the hearing, he or she is incompetent. What's your view on that? Because this has a tremendous impact on how magistrates' recommended orders are applied, is it not?
Mr. Chief Justice, I agree. My point is the magistrate and the judge should have addressed that issue. They should have addressed the timing issue, and they did not.
You mean addressed it in the order that as of such and such a date, that's when the judge signs it, and you're saying that the court speaks through its journal entry. But if the order would have contained language that the individual is declared to be incompetent and that incompetency commenced, 6 months before the order goes on, what is that how you say that should have been addressed?
Well, I think that should have been a finding by the magistrate, and it wasn't. No date was put forth. So therefore, when the journal entry is signed June 21 of 02, that's when it starts. If you wish to find a date prior to that, I find that to be a substantive finding, because that's certainly dating an incompetence.
But the trial judge did not make a decision on June 21st that the party was incompetent, did it? It just looked at the magistrate's report and essentially said, I approve the report. Then the trial judge came back, Judge Clamor came back and said that as of the date of May 10th hearing, in the nunk-pro-tunk orders, there was clear and convincing evidence that Donald Peck was incompetent. He very well could have become competent between this recommendation of the magistrate didn't sit very long, fortunately. Some do, before the trial judge gets to them, and there's a procedure in our rules for expediting that, but this may be an academic question because it doesn't usually come up. I mean, it's usually, I think the assumption is that when the judge says, I accept the magistrate's report, it accepts it as of all the dates in the report, and that's what the trial judge was essentially saying here, was that as of May 10th, in the first order, which was agreeably a little cryptic, but go ahead.
But Mr. Chief Justice, just as in a domestic relations, a divorce case, when you have to define the term of the marriage, that's really important, especially for the valuation of assets.
Right.
This should have been done here as well, because this very well could have affected the valuation of some assets or the ability to marry. Secondly, if I can just go back to address Justice O'Connor's point about needing the guardian's permission, once again to marry, possibly. Once again, that is another important area where there could potentially be a collateral attack by saying he was incompetent, I should have been allowed, or I should have been given consent to this marriage. And once again, that's why this issue needed to be addressed. Finally, Mr. Chief Justice, you talked about Judge Clamor signing the entry in September of 2003. The entry of June 21, 2002, assigned by Judge Skoke, he passed away. Then this matter was taken up by Judge Clamor. Nunc pro tunc, we talk about now is for then. What should have been done? What was in the mind of the hearing officer? Certainly, how could Judge Clamor know what was in Judge Skoke's mind? How did he know Judge Skoke's intent? Certainly, he's unable to do that. And finally, I only have about 50 seconds left. I would say, I would put forth, why did 13 months go by before this nunk-pro-tunk entry was submitted and signed by the judge? We as human beings, we don't do things in a vacuum. We are motivated to do things for a reason. This nunk-pro-tunk was put forth for a reason by the other side. And I I know I attempted to get into that. The appellate court said there were certain facts before it that it could not consider, but I would have this court consider that. And I will.
Counselor, before you go away, I want to ask you a question. Was the domestic relations court the appropriate forum to determine whether this individual was competent at the time they made the marriage?
Yes, I believe it was, if an annulment was the objective, which is why the guardian filed it in the domestic relations court. So I believe that since, and I believe the case law allows an incompetent to marry, to annul that marriage would have to be in the domestic relations division.
I have no doubt that the annulment comes from the domestic relations, but the issue of determining whether they were competent at the time they entered into the marriage, is that something for the domestic relations court to conduct a hearing on?
Well, not whether he is incompetent as for his person and estate, but is he incompetent to the point where he cannot enter into a marriage contract?
I understand that. I understand what's at stake, but the forum, I'm just asking.
I believe that it is the appropriate forum for that limited issue, not to prove incompetence per se, but incompetence to enter into a marriage.
Thank you, Mr. Cahill.
Thank you.
Mr. Mash.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court, my name is Cliff Mash, and I represent the guardian for the estate of Donald Peck. Briefly, first to address the issue as to whether or not this is really not a moot issue, I would submit that there's serious question if it is a moot issue. A couple things to bear in mind when considering that is, number one, as counsel pointed out, the annulment action was heard by the court. The court made the determination that although there may have been a finding of incompetency, that didn't necessarily rule out the fact that he could still enter into a valid marriage. Court heard evidence and made the determination that there was that he was sufficiently competent to make that determination. There was no appeal taken of that. So the annulment proceeding is over. The fact that the annulment proceeding took place in the first place was what I will admittedly concede is what gave rise to the nunk-pro-tunk entry, because the defense that was raised in the annulment by counsel was that the competency determination by the court was not relevant because it was not made, it was not an entry. The June 21st decision was not entered into before the marriage took place. The marriage took place on June 10th. So what you have here is a situation where a magistrate made a finding of clear and convincing evidence that Mr. Peck was incompetent. There was objections filed on June 2nd of 2002. During the pendency of hearing the objections, Mr. Peck and Ethel Johnson ran off to another state and got married. That was done without the approval of a guardian. There was a guardian that was appointed on behalf of Mr. Peck under the emergency powers, and there was a guardian in place at that point in time who did not consent or approve of that marriage. So the whole issue of whether or not this nunk-pro-tunk entry is valid or relates back is really of no legal consequence anymore, because the annulment proceeding was dismissed and never appealed, and the marriage is intact. But moving on to the issues that have been raised by the
appellant. Let me just stop you there. Maybe that's the answer to my question. But did you find any law that on the question of whether a successor judge may enter a nunk-pro-tunk order to a deceased judge's order?
I found no specific law directly addressing that, Your Honor, but I would submit that a judge can enter a nunk-pro-tunk entry as long as the action by the prior court is manifest. Otherwise, it becomes clear and manifest by the prior decision that that issue was addressed, and he's merely clarifying that, which is exactly what I submit happens in this case.
It would seem that in a competency case such as this, where one's competency may sort of go in and out, that 53-4C would maybe be interim orders where one can get an order, as you know, quickly from the judge, an interim order approving or disapproving the magistrate's report. There is, as Judge Grindel indicates in her dissent, there is that provision that would have been useful here if that had happened.
And you're absolutely right, Your Honor. There is a provision that would have allowed the court, after the issuance of the magistrate's decision, to immediately adopt it, pending objections, which would stay it, or enter an interim order. And that that gives the court a tool if the court has foresight or an understanding that maybe actions are going to take place in which it needs to protect the status quo. But in this case, the probate court took a different procedure. It appointed an emergency guardian, which remained in place until June 14th, which was 4 days after the wedding took place, without the consent. So here we have on the record of the probate court that the court did attempt to maintain the status quo by appointing a guardian, ultimately approved ineffective because they ran off without the consent of the guardian, and a separate court in annulment proceeding determined that the marriage remained valid.
Was there any requirement then for the guardian to consent, or has that been ruled on by the domestic relations court in the annulment proceeding, or is that question still at issue?
The domestic relations court, as I understand it, Your Honor, did acknowledge that there was a finding of incompetency, but rendered the determination that under Pennsylvania law, because that's where the wedding took place, incompetency in and of itself does not render a marriage invalid. There's subsequent inquiries that could be made, and it found that under the facts that were presented before the court, the marriage was valid. Really, there's...
I guess I haven't asked the question artfully enough. Did any court pass on the requirement for the guardian's consent to the Pennsylvania marriage?
And, Your Honor, I'm not aware if that was specifically addressed by the annulment court.
Is that at issue in any court anywhere at the moment?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Counsel, you had your arms in the air like you're trying to get to something. I hope you do, because I'm having a hard time understanding what's left.
Yes. There's really, the appellant has raised 2 points in this case, Your Honor. In the brief, as I understand it, first they say that based on certain provisions in Civil Rule 53, a trial court, as a matter of law, cannot render a decision and make it effective prior to the point in time that it renders its decisions. And it cites the 2 sections in that case. And I would respectfully submit, but what appellant's doing is it's citing provisions under Civil Rule 53 which relate to, and we will certainly concede, that a magistrate's decision is merely a recommendation and does not have the effect of law until the court addresses that. There is nothing in Civil Rule 53 that precludes a court from making its order effective at a point prior to the point in time when it adopts the magistrate's decision. As a matter of fact, Civil Rule 53 E4B indicates that a trial court can modify, reject, or accept or hear additional evidence. So the rule itself indicates the trial court has the authority to do things other than what the magistrate does, if that's what it chooses to do. There's really 2 provisions that appellant cited. The first one is 53 E4A. That, again, relates to the fact that the magistrate's decision doesn't give effect until it's adopted by the court. We concede that. That's absolutely the truth. And Civil Rule 53 E4C, which, as Chief Justice indicated, that says that the trial court has the power, if it wants to issue interim orders. There's nothing in the rule that prevents a court from doing it. What's really germane, the really relevant issue is, was the nunc-pro-tunc entry in this case a mere clarification of a judicial action that took place prior to the nunc-pro-tunc entry?
What does our resolution of that question do to the case? It seems as though you're telling us that the marriage, the annulment proceeding has been adjudicated and the marriage is then approved. So what is the relevance of our determination?
In my opinion, it is of no legal consequence, Your Honor. I don't think it's a relevant issue.
But you're telling us the key issue is whether or not the trial court has the authority to issue a nunc-pro-tunc making a declaration of incompetence effective as of the date of the hearing by the magistrate.
And
our resolution of that has really no legal consequence to what's going to happen in this case.
I don't believe it does, but if this court is of the opinion that it does have a legal consequence, as appellant has argued, I would submit that a review of the record of this case demonstrates that the nunc-pro-tunc entry does nothing more than memorialize prior judicial action. The magistrate's decision entered on May 22nd of 2002 makes specific findings of facts, among which is it acknowledges a guardianship report which finds dementia and incompetency. It acknowledges the submission of a medical report which acknowledges the existence of dementia and incompetency.
Hey, let me try this another way, because sure. I'm still mystified. Let's assume that we agree with the appellant that the Court of Appeals got it wrong and that Judge Grindel had it right. How does that affect your client, the guardian, or his ward?
Unless there is action at issue other than the marriage, which is the only action at issue I'm aware of, Your Honor, it does not. Mr. Beck continues to be subject to...
There's no issue of transfer of property or funds that happened in the interim.
Mr. Peck is still under the guardianship of Mr. Maraglia.
But there wasn't some massive movement of funds or something in this no man's land disputed time.
There is not in the record of this case acknowledgement of a movement of funds. In the magistrate's opinion, one of the findings of facts was there was a movement of funds in the interim of hearings. $38,000 got moved out of an account which Mr. Peck didn't know about, and he acknowledged that during the hearing. I would submit it's significant, Your Honor, in looking at the magistrate report, that one of the specific findings of facts that was noted by the magistrate was that Ken Peck, the son of Donald Peck, said he did not know if his father should make the decision about whether to get married. So that was obviously an issue that was discussed during the course of the magistrate's decision. Most importantly, look at the conclusions of law by the magistrate. The magistrate makes the conclusion. Admittedly, it is a proposed or recommended finding, but he makes the conclusion that based on the evidence presented on the hearing on May 10th, that Mr. Peck is incompetent and based on clear and convincing evidence. The next order by the court, which it formally adopts it, it adopts the findings of the magistrate. One of the findings that it adopts is the determination as a result of the hearing on May 10th, by clear and convincing evidence, Mr. Peck was incompetent.
Counsel, just one point of clarification at this juncture. Was the $38,000 moved after the magistrate's hearing and before the declaration the order issued by the court?
It was moved before the magistrate's hearing, Your Honor.
How soon before that hearing?
It is not apparent. It is not apparent by the magistrate's report. If you look at magistrate report finding, number 10, the magistrate finds that Mr. Peck testified at the hearing on the guardianship application that he did not recall going directly to the bank with his girlfriend, Ethel Johnson, after the last hearing and closing an account containing $38,000. That's the most that the record contains as it relates to that finding. In sum, the nunk-pro-tunk entry does nothing more than say that the court's prior ruling, which adopted in totality the magistrate's finding, makes the conclusion, which is apparent on its face, that the determination of clear and convincing evidence and incompetency was rendered as of May 10th.
So if we do that, then we are answering the legal question, I guess, that I posed to Mr. Cahill, that as of the date that the court puts on its order pursuant to the rule, magistrate's decision then becomes the order of the court, and all of the factual elements of that finding by the court are the factual elements of the magistrate's decision, which is a debatable issue, but it seems to me that's probably the correct on the law.
And to hold otherwise, Chief Justice, would provide an incentive to other parties to run around and act before the court formally adopts the magistrate's decision, and therefore avoid, even though a magistrate may have found against them, you know, use that time in between to try and do something and then argue, well, it didn't apply to me because you didn't make the determination.
Although isn't the point that the magistrate never really talks about a specific date? Doesn't the finding just say he is incompetent and requires assistance of a guardian? And when one of the reasons that we're arguing about the nunc pro tunc is there's a specific date that is being offered as of 13 months later, September 2003, by another judge who is inserting a date that is not in the magistrate's order. That's what I'm understanding.
And I will concede, Your Honor, in the conclusions of law by the magistrate doesn't specify that there was a hearing on May 10th of 2002. However, if you look at the initial statements of the magistrate's report, The magistrate states that there was a hearing, a full hearing held before the magistrate, and the docket of the court reflects that that hearing was held on May 10th. The totality of all these statements as a matter of record of the court can only lead to the conclusion that the magistrate's determination of clear and convincing evidence and of the competency was made as a result of a hearing on May 10th.
So you're saying that in September 2003, when this order is signed, it wasn't necessary for that second judge to say, I think I better have the parties in here and have them both looking at what we're intending to do to correct this order.
The reason for that order, Your Honor, was at that point in time, there was an attempt by the appellant to fight the annulment proceeding on the argument that the magistrate's decision didn't apply to him because the court didn't adopt it before the marriage took place. All the non-pro-tunk entry tried to do was to make it clear, based on prior rulings, and the basis for the non-pro-tunk ruling comes directly from the court record, from the prior rulings, that when the court adopted the magistrate's findings of facts and conclusions of law on June 21st, one of the findings that it adopted was the determination by the magistrate on May 10th that Mr. Peck was incompetent by clear and convincing evidence.
So the effect of the adoption of the magistrate's order puts into effect any date findings that the magistrate has already expressed.
I would submit that's correct.
Rather than saying that everything now takes effect on the date that the court enters the order.
Correct. That's correct. And if the court wants to make it clear that it wants its order to be effective at a different point in time, it certainly has the power to do that. But when the court adopted the magistrate's finding, one of the things it had adopted was the finding that Mr. Peck was incompetent as a result of the evidence on May 10th of 2002. And I thank the courts for its attention.
Thank you, Mr. Mash. Mr. Cahill, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Mr. Cahill, may I ask you, what would be the import of our decision in this case if, in fact, the annulment has been concluded and that marriage isn't at issue? What is the import of any decision we'll reach in this case with respect to the application of the court's non-pro-tunk entry?
Two things. First of all, Civil Rule 53 provisions 4A and C will remain in whole, and they will not in any way be harmed by this court's decision today. Once again, a time frame should be adopted. We should not be able to say that a magistrate's decision, in fact, has the force of law. With regard to the annulment, I would say, Your Honor, that there finally is a reason put forth here today why that nunk-pro-tunk was put forth 13 months later. At the appellate level, the appellee did not even file a brief. They did file a motion to dismiss, which the appellate court said that the appellant had a stake in this case. To now put forth that there was a reason, that there was a need for a date, shows that there was a substantive reason why something had to be done that was never mentioned before. And that is my point here today, that this could be used as a collateral attack against the judgment of the Domestic Relations Court.
I assume that you didn't find law that speaks to the issue whether a successor judge can enter a nunk-pro-tunk order for on a judge's order that's deceased. Is there any law in that you
found? There was mention that, once again, a specific clerical matter could be addressed by a new judge. But in this case, I do not believe the facts of that case apply here when there's a substantive provision inserted in 13 months later.
Thank you, Mr. Cahill. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.